Welcome to the final hour of Rosie on the House this Saturday morning. It may be your second hour, your third hour, or your fourth hour of listening. We're on 7 to 11 every single Saturday morning. 7 o'clock hour started with a great conversation about the Declaration of Independence. If you need a fresher up course on the Declaration of Independence, or you want to make sure your kids or your grandkids have a basic understanding of the Declaration of Independence, make sure you capture the 7 o'clock hour from this morning's broadcast and play that for them. We had a history of professor from Grand Canyon University here covering it in a highly passionate, energetic, creative, entertaining way. So get it and listen to it. Now, I'll go on because I had a bunch of other introductory material here, but we had a couple callers that have held for a long, long time that I want to jump to them. Tony's been holding for a long time. Glenn's been holding for a long time. We have a special guest from Tucson that's going to join us for a little interview, but let's just get to it. Here at Rosie on the House, we're going to bring Tony into the conversation, and I want to thank him for his patience. Go ahead, my man.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for holding, for listening to me.
Yeah, you bet.
And I've been listening since 7 o'clock this morning, by the way.
Yeah, very good, Tony. We appreciate it.
I try when I can.
Yeah.
And I have a couple of questions, quick question, actually. I finally started doing the super cooling.
Okay.
And I find out that my temperature in the house, even though the temperature, I put it up to 66, and then like around 8, 9 o'clock hour, the AC goes on nonstop at noon. Is that normal, or is that
okay?
Something.
Now, we got to make sure you're on the right power plan. Are you on
I am. 12 at noon to 7.
Noon to 7. Okay. Shortly after 7 o'clock, you ought to ask your air conditioner to get your house as cool as you can possibly stand it over the course of the night.
Okay.
Then you ought to ask it at about 11:30 or 11:45 the next morning. It's a programmable thermostat. Then you have to let the thermostat know, hey, thermostat, it's okay if my house goes to 76 or 78 during the course of the afternoon, and then at 7 o'clock, the cycle starts all over again.
Okay.
Once, I actually took a phone call from someone and an email from someone who was only trying to supercool 2 hours at a time each night, from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock when they went to bed, they would turn the thermostat down. That isn't enough to super saturate the coolness through all the clothes that are hanging in your closet, the mattresses, the window coverings, the carpet, the upholstery, the furniture. You want everything in that house down at below 70 degrees. That helps hold the temperature through the afternoon as the outside of the house is heating up. The key to doing super cooling correct is when you get your bill, take a look at how much electricity you're buying on peak and how much off peak. You ought to very, very easily get to where you're buying 20% of all the power you consume in a month in on peak times. I've got a bill in my hand here from James and Karen. They actually took a picture of it and sent it to me. He's consuming in a 3,000-square-foot home. He showed me his consumption year over year. He's higher than he was last year in total consumption, but he's consuming 92% of his power off-peak. The man's paying 10 cents a kilowatt hour. That's incredible. That's how you know you're doing super cooling right, Tony. Get your ratio to at least 20% off peak, and I operate at above 90%. This fella James operates above 90%.
He's at 92.
When you're doing it right, you've got the water heater shut off, you've got the swimming pool motor, every electric device in the house is shut off between noon and 7. And you ought to be somewheres between 9 and 11 cents a kilowatt. Take your total bill, divide it by the total number of kilowatts, and you ought to be at roughly a dime in the middle of the summer in the hottest days. I had someone bring me their APS bill this week. 17 cents a kilowatt. Mm. And they wanted to know if converting to super cooling would help. Sooner or later, we'll get them on.
Yes.
Sooner or later, we'll get them on.
Oh, where are we at? Yes.
Our special guest from Tucson. This is the coolest place I've heard of in a long time, and I never knew it was there. I've never been there, and now it's on the top of my bucket list to get there.
And we found this as we were doing research for our article, when we talk about plants that don't do great in Arizona. But if you've got the time and the inclination, you can make it work. And doing that, we found the, as you mentioned now for the bucket list, it's a mission garden in Tucson that's actually an agricultural museum on what is known to be the longest, most continued farmed plot of land in the country. And to talk about it, we've got Dina Cowan. Did I pronounce that right? Cowan?
Yes.
And she's the community outreach coordinator for Mission Garden. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
Tell us about the Mission Garden.
So Mission Garden is, as you said, an agricultural museum to illustrate in a living museum in a garden the ancient agricultural history in the Tucson Basin that actually took place on the same site and in the vicinity of the Santa Cruz River, which used to flow, and people irrigated the farm fields with irrigation ditches from the river, and people have been living here in this area actually for 12 or 13,000 years, and farming for at least 4,100 years.
And how did they determine that 4,000 year? That's a pretty interesting story in itself.
Well, recent archaeological excavations actually uncovered evidence that of these ancient agriculture, corn that was dated to 4,100 years, the prehistoric irrigation canals, as I said, and all along this area, there have been several archaeological excavations that have revealed the earliest agriculture in the region.
Mm-hmm. And a major flood preserved this agricultural
recently,
site.
Very close to here, they were building a road near Ina, and they discovered the backhoe. The person who was working the backhoe was extremely adept at his job, and he felt something which turned out to be a footprint preserved for thousands of years in an agricultural field, an early agricultural field. So around 3,500 years ago, some men and some women and a dog and a child were walking in that field irrigating. They actually discovered the planting wells, which was probably corn, and a flood came and filled the whole field with sediment and preserved it for us to discover.
4,000 years later by somebody operating a backhoe. That is a good machine operator right there.
Yes.
So walk me through the Mission Garden. It's a 4-acre plot of land, and there's a lot to see there.
Yeah, so as I said, we're interpreting all of that history, or that's our goal, to interpret all of that history in a living garden. So we are a work in progress. We began in 2012. We planted the first trees, a Spanish colonial fruit trees orchard, and they're all heirloom heritage trees that descended from the trees that were originally brought over by the missionaries and introduced into this region by missionaries under the auspices of the Spanish crown. And they include fig trees and pomegranates, quince, citrus, plums, grapevines. So there's a Spanish colonial vegetable garden too. But we also try to, we have what we call a timeline garden. So we begin with the earliest agriculture And then we go run through time, and we have a series of plots. So we have the early agriculture, Hohokam period agriculture, then pre-contact agriculture, post-contact, which means, you know, previous to when the Europeans came and after the Europeans came. How did the agriculture change? What are some of the crop varieties that were embraced by the native people who were already living here when the Europeans came and cultivating on this site? Then soon we're going to be adding a Mexican garden and a Chinese garden, because the Chinese, there were Chinese farming on this very plot. Again, the excavations discovered a lot of Chinese artifacts from those farmers. So,
What would those artifacts be? Because I know it's not rice. What would be?
Since they were living here, what was excavated was a sort of a garbage well. They're calling it a well, where they put things that were broken, maybe, or discarded. And among them were teapots and pieces of games that they would play, even opium pipes, different ceramics that they used. So actually, at the Arizona Historical Museum, there's an exhibit. It's a permanent exhibit called Rio Nuevo, Rio Viejo. And it has some of these artifacts on display that were discovered in the archaeology here. Not only the Chinese well, but also some of the cross sections of the ancient irrigation canals. And the whole history is kind of explained in that. And we also interpret it here. You can come. We're open on Saturdays in the morning from 8 to 10 to 12.
And we'll talk a little bit more with Dina Cowway, the spokesperson for Mission Garden Project in Tucson, right after this.